You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from Vacaville, California, in my wonderfully appointed office at my in-laws. I'm Andrew Wiebe, with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle. Happy Father's Day, Chuck.
Thank you.
Happy Father's
Day to you as well.
Hey, you know. That was just for the eye rolls, Dave. That's what the intro is for now. I'm just looking for the reaction.
Father's Day, and now Mother's Day are two of my favorite holidays. One, because I get to celebrate my parents. And two, because you get to really see people, a.k.a. 80% of people's parents don't have Instagram. And the amount of posts about fathers and mothers is so self-serving. Not as self-serving as Wiebe starting a show by saying Happy Father's Day to Charlie so he can say it back to him. But up there, where you're like, I'm sure your 85-year-old father's real glad you posted a picture of him on Instagram and be like, just to teach me the way life should be, a man to follow. Thank you.
I just want you to know that I didn't post on Instagram because I know my dad does not have Instagram. Therefore, I did not do it.
There you go.
Happy Father's Day to Doyle, who just gave... either Taquito or General Sal some loving. Cat Daddy counts as well. 16 days, folks. 16 days as of today, June 22nd. That's how many days until July 8th and the MLS back is tournament. So it's a little bit more than 2 weeks. Coming up today on the show, we got a fun chat with Peter Vermees, the soccer czar, as I like to think of him, in Kansas City. And then Sean Johnson is going to join us on the back end of the show to talk about the Black Players Coalition, who organized and announced themselves on Juneteenth and are working to change the world, to change MLS, to change their own lives. And also, finally, after weeks of you waiting, I even saw a Reddit post that said, what happened to the greatest team of all time bracket? It's back, baby. The semifinals today. We'll do that in between the interviews. But first, let's get some news. You guys watching soccer? Overseas, Americans, decent weekend. Christian Pulisic, a little debut for the first team of Bayern. For Chris Richards, Gio Reyna, getting the assist, getting the shout out from Holland. So that's a big one. Doyle, what'd you see? What'd you like?
I like the difference in Chelsea when Pulisic came on. He definitely changed that game for them because they didn't have a lot of ideas and they didn't have difference makers on the final third. And look, there are reasons to criticize Christian Pulisic and ask for more of him. But he has... just repeatedly, whether it was for Borussia Dortmund or for Chelsea, been a killer in the final third. And if he stays healthy, he looks like a $75 million winger. So, that's the big thing for me. He is the best attacking player in the pool, and he's playing like it. So I like that. Gio Reyna, it was an interesting debut as a starter for him because initially it looked like kind of a 3-4-2-1 from Dortmund, and he was playing in that two line as like a pure creator underneath the center forward, but then he dropped deeper and became more of a linker, kind of a Darlington Nagby role as the shape shifted to a 3-5-2. And like he struggled the first 20-25 minutes of the game. He was not good, but he was 17 starting in a Bundesliga game. And then he kind of grew into the game. He had a wonderful assist. And even though I am still... I still question his ability to hit the right pass to the right foot in rhythm with the right timing. Like, that just has never been a part of his game, either with the youth ranks or so far for Borussia Dortmund. He's physical enough. He's got enough attitude out there. And he's obviously skillful enough to be a really good Bundesliga player. And if you have that at 17, I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about what this kid could be at 19 and 22 and 25 and so on. So those are the two big takeaways, I think, for me from this weekend in terms of Americans abroad.
Me and Doyle have a little disagreements on Gio Reyna. I agree with a lot of what you said, but the other piece about him that you just feel when you watch him play, and everyone feels that plays with him, is how calm he is in danger. And so teammates can give it to him under pressure, which is why he can play deeper in central midfield. And at 17, it's absurd. And I think most people would say Claudio Reyna is probably the peak all time in our pool at being able to do that. And so Gio's on that track. And then the hope is he adds more as he goes forward. But the Darlington Nagbe comp, I don't even hate, because Nagbe's biggest attribute is he won't lose the ball. And yeah, he's a pit bull on top of it. And he can do whatever he needs to do. Pulisic will be interesting. And we're going to talk about this a lot over the next 10 years. Kind of just what his position is. Because you see how natural he looks on the end of the line, basically playing as a forward. And in that Chelsea appearance, swapping around Giroud. And it's like, Landon played outside and played inside so much and had that speed. And you start to see pieces of it where I think a lot of people thought Pulisic would start on the wing and then move inside. And I don't know that that's ever going to happen. And I don't think it has to. The question is how Greg Berhalter can use him best. And the other thing that was interesting to me was I watched the Newcastle game and Almiron was awesome. And I saw DeAndre Yedlin on the bench at one point and forgot he was even on the team, and realized as a person who for 15 years now has watched European soccer in a mindset of like, I hope that the US looks better and MLS looks better and how people perceive it, I care more about what Almiron does than an American player in Yedlin. And I think part of that is Yedlin's kind of written his book a bit in Europe of like, this is who he is, and he could have great spells and maybe even move to another club, but we know what he is. He's a solid 11 to 7 to 12 roster guy on a Premier League team, where Almiron means so much as like, this is what the top end of an MLS player can be if you buy him and bring him in. So it was weird for me to notice that.
Yeah, he's a trial balloon.
I think you got a good point there. Is you look at Almiron as a product of MLS, and now when he performs on the world stage in the English Premier League, it's like, wow, MLS really has something here. They have quality players, and we can go to MLS and respect the talent that they have on the field. And it does more for the league right now than seeing Yedlin play 90 minutes every week for Newcastle. I'm really pumped about Chris Richards, and I'll tell you why. It's having a young defender who can grow into the system and be an anchor for years to come. Because we can have those athletic attacking players in America, guys that are going to get you goals, guys that are going to create goals. Fantastic. You want those players. But you also want defenders who are experienced, have a high IQ, and can be tactically aware in different situations. Chris Richards is now in Bayern Munich. I mean, this is a top five, top 10 club in the world, easily. And he's getting minutes, training with these guys, the repetition. You can't replicate that anywhere else. And now he's growing into his own. I mean, under some of the best players in his position in the world, which is encouraging to me, because we need players who you can count on in tough games when you're playing those difficult situations in CONCACAF, when you have to play away on the road, when you just have to grind things out, you can't play your game in certain instances. You need defenders who you can count on to keep a clean sheet. And now starting to see Chris Richards continue his development so he can get to that level where you're like, this is a player who's playing in a top league for a top team, and you know what you're going to get out of him every match.
I mean, I think the development note is the one there, because to fight through and get to the point where he's at took time at Bayern, took acclimation, took at some low points and some high points. He's been really good for their youth teams. It may not be that he's at Bayern. That's okay. Right. We have to know that that's okay. He's in the shop window right now. He is not Alphonso Davies. He is not the rookie of the year in the Bundesliga. He is not the guy that you see on all the like Squawka 433, like BR Football Report, how much money is he worth? He's more of a slow and steady, earn your way in. And if he's not at Bayern, this was an opportunity for somebody else to see him, to recognize him, to say, oh, hey, we should maybe go buy this guy. And what you want for Chris Richards is to be in a situation where he is the man somewhere else, right? Because that may not happen at Bayern, and that's no shame. But find the right situation, because as you know, Charlie, as we have talked about so many times with these guys, if you have the right situation, you have a little faith from the coaching staff, technical director, that's when you can start to take those leaps. A great weekend for Americans in Europe. If you have any thoughts, let us know. But in MLS, some news notes. Nashville are chasing a DP. Reportedly, Maxi Romero at PSV, that's what Tom Bogert at MLSsoccer.com is reporting. We knew they wanted a nine. We knew they wanted to spend some money. TBD as to whether they get this guy. But I think the bigger news is probably in Cincinnati. Jurgen Locadia, we knew that loan was up July 5th. It was a big signing. We had him on. We celebrated it. Well, they extended it a year. And we'll talk to PV about transfers. But this feels to me like an opportunity maybe because he wants to be here and it didn't work at Brighton to maybe get better terms on the loan, to maybe get better terms on the buy-in because of the way the economy, because of the soccer world is working. Jurgen Locadia in Cincinnati for one more year. How big of news is that, Dave, for Cincy?
Like, it's huge that they were able to extend it as a loan because you were in a situation where you were going to run a test from February through June to see how he fit in, how he liked it, and then you were going to spend big, and it was going to be their record signing and all that. And obviously, with everything that's happened, you didn't have that opportunity, and they didn't have to roll the dice and make it a permanent signing now and just hope that what they saw for 2 weeks was enough. They have an opportunity now with another year to do what they hoped they had done. Jaap Stam's going to come in, and that's someone that you could see. How does he work under him? How does he fit into his system? And then you don't... not every team has enough to spend like this every time they want it, right? And we see it. We're going to talk to PV, but Alan Pulido is not, if Pulido fails, we'll just sign another guy at the same number. That's not how that club works. And I don't think that's how Cincinnati works. So if they were going to sign Locadia, that was it. If it didn't work out, they were going to have to find a cheap option, get someone on loan, bring in Dom Baji or bring Kyrie Shelton back from your, whatever that move is to fill that spot. Now they have an opportunity to test it again. And if he's good, they already have the term settled that they can keep him on.
By the way, we didn't mention it, but maybe the biggest news comes from Paul Tenorio. Leandro Gonzalez-Perez back to MLS, this time to Miami. Oh, whoa, are the Atlanta United fans. How should they feel about this? I mean, I can guess how they might. I'm on Twitter. Everybody else is. And vocally, they're one of the top fan bases. But this feels like a huge signing for Miami, just from a, like, as you were saying, Charlie, that foundational standpoint. They already had not a bad center back group. Mm-hmm.
You talked about experience within the league has won things. And being in a Spanish-speaking city, Miami, where you can really fit, you feel like you fit right in. For Atlanta, if I'm a supporter, I'm heated. I am heated to allow for him to go, come back to us and go to Miami. Our new rival of the South, no chance. I would be really upset, and I'm sure you've seen that on Twitter. But for Miami, this makes all the sense in the world to get somebody in, some more experience, a quality defender who has had success in this league. I think Paul McDonough's, he's a sharp guy. He's on top of his game.
They sold him to Tijuana, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, they
so
did.
That's the allocation spot. So we were kind of wondering what that might be. But yeah, Paul knew him. Paul signed him. Paul's like, hey, LGP, what's up, man? You want to roll back through? Miami seems pretty good, right? You liked Atlanta. You're going to love Miami. So I don't think it's official yet, but if Paul Tenorio is reporting it, I'm assuming that it is going to be in our inboxes very, very shortly. Before we get to Peter Vermees, remember we got our sister podcast, The Call Up. They have Ben Olsen on Tuesday, so subscribe there. Check him out on YouTube. But let's get to the man himself. Always fun to chat with him. He's been a fixture on this show for basically a decade. Peter Vermees, the manager of Sporting Kansas City. Peter, welcome to Extra Time.
Great to be here, guys. Looking forward to this chat for sure.
All right. Well, let's start with a little bit of we'll call it a softball. We're doing our greatest team of all time bracket, and we're trying to determine the greatest MLS team of all time. And we have four teams left. 2018 Atlanta, 98 DC. They're on one side of the bracket facing off to go to the final. And then 2014 LA Galaxy and 2017 Toronto FC are on the other side. In your mind, do we have one of or the greatest MLS team of all time in our remaining bracket? And who would it be? And if not, who did we miss?
Well, you missed our 2000 team. So since they're out, I would pick the LA team.
Why is that? What's the logic?
I think it's really simple. They had game changers, so many of them. Landon, I mean, I think Landon does not get enough credit from that perspective, and that he was a game changer. You even look at when he played for the Earthquakes and they won their championships. He was a game changer in those finals. He just was a game changer. You had Beckham. You had Keane. I still think that Keane is arguably the I don't know if that team doesn't have Keane. I don't think they win the championships they won. I just think that he was something special. Although I would say that my next runner up, and you guys would probably be surprised, would be the 98 team. And I say, because I've said this from, because I've played against them many times. I think Jaime Moreno was one of the most impactful players to any team in MLS over the years. And I say that because what he had the ability to do is he could play as a target forward. He could play as an underneath forward. He could drop into the midfield and play as a playmaker. He could go out wide and get an assist from a service. He could score the goal if he needed to. The guy could do everything. I thought he was an incredible player in this league. He just probably was at the wrong time because he could have played with so many better players or support cast, even though that DC team was a good team.
Matt Doyle's somewhere at home saying, yes, Peter, yes. All of these things you're saying are 100% true. I'm wondering, though, as I hear you say that, you know, your years as a defender in this league, who gave you the most trouble?
Yeah,
was it Jaime?
It was Jaime. And I say Jaime because of just that one thing. He was almost at times like a false nine, but nobody knew what a false nine was back then. He would drop in, and it was hard as a central defender to go with him because you don't want to break the line in the back. And so he was just, his movement off the ball was tremendous. He was a really, really good player.
I was watching Maradona last night. Anytime the goal against England, the solo goal, we all know it. You can see it in your mind as soon as I say that, comes on. I'll watch it like five times. I've seen it. I don't need to see it, but I want to see it. And I got to thinking, because we were going to do this interview with you, and I was like, I wonder who Peter's favorite player of all time is. Like, not best player, not like, just the guy that you just kind of irrationally stand for that has always just occupied a place in your mind as like, man, I just love this player. It can be MLS. It could be outside MLS. Who's the guy that pops to mind for you?
Well, let's pick two different times when I played and now not playing. How's that?
Yeah. Yep.
Marco van Basten was a fantastic player. His career was cut short because he had a terrible situation with his ankle, but his movement, his clinical finishing, but his movement was efficient. Like he made movements that always got himself in a position to score. And that's what his job was. And that's what he made his positioning efficient around. It was always to get in a position to score goals. And then, like I said, clinical finisher. I mean, the guy could score left, right, head, you name it. Just a tremendous player for me. Now, I don't know how, listen, I think Ronaldo's is a good player, but I don't know how anybody could ever compare him and Messi together. Honestly, I don't know how they can do it. If you just watch Messi, like really watch him, there's nothing that comes close. And for anybody to say that even Maradona or anybody comes close to Messi, I just don't see it. I don't. There's nobody that can change the game like that guy. You can take him out of Barcelona, put him on any team in the world, and they're a totally different team because of that guy. The other guys, it's not the same. Nobody can change the game like he can.
You've played for a ton of different coaches throughout your playing career. Which coach influenced you the most or impacted you the most to help you where you are now, to help you get to where you are now?
Yeah, it's such a tough question because, you know, look, you and I are together with the 20s, right? And mm-hmm. and Ziggy was the head coach. I was one of the assistants, and I learned a lot from Ziggy. But I also learned a lot from Ziggy that had nothing to do with soccer. Ziggy was a really good man. And so I learned a lot there. Then when I was, I had Bob Gansler in this country at the time was, it's crazy. If you looked at MLS in 1996, he probably identified 70% of the players that were in our league, the American players, you know, him single-handedly. His ability to identify talent was tremendous. And he made sure he knew everything. Like you talked to him about a player and he's like, oh, you mean, the number seven at, you know, Paddy Adoris, who actually, when he came up, he was actually played as number five. And it was incredible what he knew. I had a coach in Spain, which not a knock by any means. Just I think it's important to say it. He was a goalkeeper in Spain. His name was Jorge D'Alessandro. He's Argentinian. He came to Spain, played for Salamanca for many years. And he was my coach in Spain. Tab Ramos and I both played for him. One of the most detail-oriented people around soccer I ever came across. Like, video was not as big as it is today, right? So it was difficult to get like video on a team back then. And he had people all over the country that he would tap into. And so when we were getting ready to play an opponent, our set pieces, offensively and defensively, were so organized that we always scored a goal. I think we scored almost every other game in that season on a set piece because we were so organized. So he was tremendous in that regard. And then my coach in Holland, his name was Leo Steedman. As a player, we would say he was a player's coach. Like, that's what you would call him. Incredible in that he worked with you functionally around your position and to get you in the best form possible, but also mentally, he made you feel like you could conquer the world as a player just because of the way he worked with you. So it's little things like that that I took off of guys. And then I had some really bad ones that I said, I would never do that as a coach, you know, if I ever become a coach someday. And those were great experiences too. And that's what I think for all of us, our experiences are what shape us if we're paying attention.
Well, you brought up a good thing because I was left off that U20 team for the World Cup. And
that was Zing's fault, not my fault.
Okay. Because, you know, I asked Marcelo, and Marcelo said, hey, I was just the defenders. I left. I had nothing to do with the picking process. Take that up with Vermees. Take that up with PV. And I said, you know, I scored a hat trick in the game before you had to make the selection. I said, oh, I got my way into this team. And I found myself as an alternate. What happened?
So I'll tell you the truth around, not around your situation, but more around the selection process. I don't know if you were around. Were you around for the exercise that we did where we broke you guys up into groups of three and you each got a year of the U20 qualification? Were you around for that exercise or no? You may not have been.
I'm not sure.
So what we did was we took the group that we had. I don't know. It was one of our trips. And we broke the guys up into threes and we gave each group a U20 world championship year. And we told the guys to go and look at the roster and pick three guys that went on. I'm sorry, not three. Pick one guy that you say, oh yeah, well, he went on to be a great player, right? And he was on that 20 team. And then grab a guy that's on the team that you guys like, who is this guy? Because we've never seen him do anything after. And then a guy that was left off the team and then went on to be and have a great career. And what's interesting is that that's what happens in the younger age groups. Not to say that, you know, that's what happened to you, but look at you. You weren't picked, but you went on to have a really good career. And, you know, people would say, hey, why wasn't he on there? Michael Bradley wasn't on that team. And I'm sure that, you know, people would say, how could he not make the team? But the interesting thing that Ziggy did and what I was going to tell you was that Ziggy already had his 23-man roster. And he came to us, and I remember it was myself, John Harkes, Mike Lapper, Dave Durr, and somebody else. We're all in the room. And so he sat down and he had his list and he had it, you know, if this is the paper, he had it folded down, right? So he had his list and he said, I'm going to give you guys all a slip of paper and you all can write down one player that you would take that you don't think is on my list. It was kind of, you know, we didn't know that the guy that we were picking was on his list or not. And so we all wrote a name down. And, you know, and I'm not saying this because you're on the call. I honestly think I would have thought that you would have been on the list because I thought there was a lot of good attackers in that, in your group. And I thought you posed something a little different. That was change of pace, get behind teams, that type of thing. So, each of us had a person and I remember, I think it was five different names, and Ziggy eventually took three of them. And I'll tell you who my guy was. Do you think you knew? He wasn't on the initial list. And I'll give you a hint. He played in Columbus, Seattle, and then he actually finished.
Brad Evans.
Yeah. And I picked Brad. And what always pissed me off about Zig, I always told him this. So he wasn't on the original list. He got put onto the list. Now we had to also explain why we picked the guy. And so I had picked him. And when Ziggy then left and took on Columbus, Ziggy drafted Brad. And I called Ziggy and I was like, are you kidding me? And then when he goes to Seattle, he takes him to Seattle. And I tried several times to trade for him, but you know, never got him. But I always killed Ziggy every time I saw him on that one.
Oh, someday, Charlie, you're going to get the truth. This comes to me right now. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I honestly, and I'm not saying this because I really am not. I think you know me pretty well. We got to know each other pretty well on those trips. There were certain guys I thought would be on his list. I would have thought you would have been a part of our group. So that's, I'm not saying that I would have picked you if I would have known, it might have been different, but you were definitely a guy I thought that should have been on the team just because of you gave us something different that we didn't have in the team, personally speaking.
Peter, you mentioned draft picks here. Before we get to the tournament, and we will get there, but anytime we have you, it's too fun to pick your brain. I've always said that you're drafting from like the time I started covering the team, I think in like 2009, right around the time that you came in to both roles, has just been incredible. Like you built the team off of so many of those draft picks. In your mind, what's the best draft pick you ever made? Like for, you know, the under the radar guy maybe, or maybe it was just a no doubter that you knew you had to get. Is there one guy where you say, boy, looking back, we made an inspired decision on that one?
Roger Espinosa. And I say that because I'll tell you the story on that really quickly. I come into the league in 2007. Dave Casper was at that time, I think he was called Director of Soccer Operations. I came in I was the first titled technical director, if you will. And I remember, look, I'm being totally frank with you. I learned on the job. I didn't know there was nobody to follow except for Dave. Dave was doing a lot of stuff as kind of like a technical director at the time. And he was working really closely with Kevin Payne back then. And so I go to the Final Four and I'm trying to get up to speed with all the players. I was lucky because I was with the 20s. I knew that age group really well. I knew a lot of the college players. So I had a really good understanding. And that was 2 years before. So now it's 2000, you know, it's going into 2007. It's 2006. I go to the Final Four and I see Roger Espinosa playing with Ohio State. And 30 minutes into the game, I get up out of my seat. I walk up to the top. I get on my cell phone. I call Todd Durbin. Mike Todd. I said, I want to sign this guy to a Generation Adidas contract. He goes, you can't just do that. I had no idea. I'm like, why not? You know, like, why not?
I want to sign him right now. Last. Oh, sure, I can. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, let's go. By the way, I was just technical director at that point, right? So, whatever. Long story short, he says, hey, look, the way it works is if we're going to do that as a league, I'll take the name. I'm going to float it around to all these other coaches in the league. And if I get good feedback, then I'll consider it. I go, what do you mean you're going to tell the other guys?
Yeah.
I'm not telling the other guys. So I'm like, all right, this is their world. This isn't my world. So I got to figure out how to work in this. I said, okay, great. Float it around. That's Friday. You know how you have a break on Saturday. You play Sunday, the final, whatever. So I go to Sunday. I don't hear back from Todd. I go watch the next game. I watch again. 15 minutes in the game. Roger's killing it. I'm like, I leave my seat. I go back up. I go, Todd, you signed this guy? And he goes, listen, I floated his name around and I didn't get any good feedback. I go, you got to be kidding me. So now I'm in aggressive pressing mode. I'm high up the field. Yeah. I'm winning the ball. I'm ready to go, you know, knock him out. I said, Todd, I said, I'll make a deal with you. I first said, so why can't we just sign him? He goes, well, you have to guarantee that you're going to pick the guy. I was like, I'll send you an email right now. I traded for another first round draft pick. I said, I'll tell you right now. He goes, I'll take him with one of my two first round draft picks. I promise you that. If he's available, I said, I have a guy I'm going to select first. I'll take him. If he's available at my second round, first round draft pick, I'll select him. He goes, you'll write me an email? I go, yep. Send him an email. He goes, okay. So they worked it out. They got him into the league. I think I got Roger at like 9th or 11th, or I can't remember off the top of my head, but somewhere in that range. I could not believe he dropped all the way down there. Nobody selected him. He's a monster. He's still a monster today. He's just unbelievable, that guy.
He's my favorite player in MLS history for me. I think it's just because I was there when it started and he had the reputation and he just made good on everything. Let's talk about actual soccer going on right now.
I want to say this to you. Listen, there were some other guys like CJ Sapong was fantastic. Dom Dwyer, his time, excellent. His time here. Teal Bunbury.
Yep.
He helped us so much in our model of play early on because of his, you know, Teal has this one thing. He has this, a lot of guys that are fast, a lot of times don't like conditioning. He could, his intervals, like he could sprint, recover, sprint again. I mean, he was relentless in that aspect. Tremendous. Beasler, Zusi. I mean, there's just so many guys I go down the list of. Really good.
Chance over so many of them. I mean, it's hard to pick one. It's hard to pick one. Let's talk about the tournament, right?
I was trying to get Ike Opara. I had Ike slotted. Like, I was taking Ike Opara. And I remember being in the room, was trying to do a deal with New York Red Bull back when Baca was there. And I was trying to do a deal and Ike was coming out and I wanted Ike so bad. And I just couldn't get up one more slot to get there. And I knew Ike was going to be taken. So yeah, interesting time.
If we have time, we'll get a what if from you. I got a question on that here in my list. But let's talk about what's happening right now. July 8th, MLS is back tournament. We know the format, World Cup style. I'll just keep it simple. Who does the format favor? What kind of team?
I think that the format, it's not the format. I just think all the variables put together, I think Dallas, Miami, Orlando, Atlanta, Houston, those teams, because of the heat in Orlando, and the fact that you don't have, you got to think of it this way. You start out in, you know, whatever, let's just say the first week of March, and you wind up playing probably 10 to 15 games by the time the summer months start to hit. And everybody at least has 90 minutes fitness in them by that time. And so they can use that to help themselves adapt and acclimate to the heat in and around the league and the different climates that you're going to go to. And you can survive the environment because you've built yourself up to playing 90 minutes fit. The fact of the matter now is we don't have 10 to 15 games under our belt and we're going to be thrust into this heat. And that heat is going to be a big factor, I think, for all the teams. And the ones that are training every day and getting acclimated to that, it's a big advantage.
One of the other interesting things is for MLS, home field advantage is massive. And obviously, we don't know what the environment will be like, but no team is home field. For you as a coach, how do you motivate? How do you get a team in the right place mentally to go out on a field in a youth, you know, facility, sort of, and just play for themselves?
Play for themselves. Yeah, I this is a tough one. The only thing that I would say is that there are some environments in Major League Soccer that are still not the best places to play when it comes to the crowd, right? That's just being honest. And so when you go there, you got to find an extra motivation. You know, I can say this. I can say that at our place. I don't think it's hard for teams to come in to our place and play because it's a good environment. I remember when Seattle just came into the league. When you go there and play, yeah, it's great for Seattle, but it's great for the other team as well. The guys, this is like, okay, this is what I want to play in front of. This is motivation. This is excitement. So the advantage that Seattle had at one point actually was almost backfiring because the other team came in so motivated, right? But what happens is the crowd, as soon as you start to play well at home, your crowd all of a sudden takes on another level too, and it starts to not it takes on the shape of not helping you anymore if you're the opposing team. It really starts to, you know, put you under it. So given the fact that there are teams still in the league that, you know, don't have the best of environments, you got to find an extra motivation, and we'll do the same down there. But it's going to be even more difficult because you have no chatter, right? I'm sure they're going to try and pump something into the stadium like they've done in other places. But I still think it's artificial. So guys are going to have to, I'll say it two ways. Guys are going to have to be intrinsically motivated. And I think myself and the staff are going to have to pick and choose our moments to be that external motivation that they're going to need to keep them going through the game.
So is there a player in the locker room that you're going to look at and say, I need you to step it up. I need you to be the guy that's making sure everybody's on point. Everyone has the correct energy to go out there and get results, because at the end of the day, it's 1.1 million plus a CCL spot. And if you can win this tournament, you got to do it that.
Yeah. I would say that I'm pretty fortunate because right up the spine, Timmy in goal is very boisterous. Roger, I don't even have to say anything to him. Polito, his work ethic is tremendous. So that in itself will be incredible role model, if you will. Zeusy's the same way. Zeus doesn't say a lot. Zeus just works. So those guys, in that respect, will you'll have some guys that'll do it vocally. You have others will do it by just, you know, their lead by example type thing. And then you'll have other guys in between, like Ilya, Roger. They'll demand from guys, just to be on top of their game. So I'm lucky that it's spread out that way within the group. There's a lot of the guys are very conscientious. You know, they're good pros. So we're fortunate here to have that within the group.
Peter, who benefits most from Felipe Gutierrez's surgery and absence? Who's the guy that, like, might have been not getting as many minutes, it's going to push right in and get a lot more? Is it Gadi Kinda? Is it Bucio? Who's going to benefit?
I think it's a little bit unfair to say this. I'll say Boos, but Boos was already strong without Felipe getting injured.
Yeah.
He was already right there. So it's a little bit, it's not a fair answer because he was already earning it without him getting injured. Boos has made huge strides in short periods of time, and his maturity is second to none. He's just an unbelievable kid. He works. Maybe that would be probably the biggest name. The second name I would say is Cam Duke. Cam Duke he's a young kid who we signed as another homegrown. I actually knew. So him and his dad and I worked together for a number of years in youth soccer. And so I know his mom as well. I knew when she was pregnant with him. So I've seen him since he was a baby. I've known the kid forever. He played at my youth club, everything. He's got something that has really started to blossom in a really short period of time. He'll be an interesting player, I think, as well.
Before we let you go, Peter, we're going to have Sean Johnson on the show as well to talk about the Black Players Coalition. A lot going on over the last few weeks. You've been around professional sports. You mentioned some of the great names around the world. Soccer has an inherent side of political and social activism. What do you, as a leader, and what do you just as a person see an athlete's role in that space?
So, you know, look, I've had bad experiences with teammates of mine, especially years of playing overseas. I'm always proud of the fact that we as a team always rallied around those situations that occurred. What I am very proud of right now is that the guys are doing the same. And whether that is, you have guys that are standing up for the league, and you also have guys that are standing up for their team. We've had some really good moments here recently with our group and our guys getting together and sharing experiences. And it's been educational for all of our staff, all of our players. And one of the things that I think, and I said this to the guys, is that this is something that we cannot allow time to allow it to be forgotten. It can't be one of those things where, okay, well, there's been some protests and now people are kind of over it and you got less people showing up. It's got to be taken to another level in that we can't stand for these things to happen anymore, because they happen and then time goes by and you kind of forget about, oh, and then another thing happens and now you're back in it again. And then time goes by. Like, we gotta change this. We just have to change it. And so I think that the athletes have, I think they have a double-edged sword here. And I don't mean that it's a double-edged sword, good and bad. I mean, they have a two-pronged approach. And I say this for anybody, right? We all have a professional life and then we have our personal life. And I think that as much as you can use opportunities in your professional life to make stands, I actually think sometimes it means so much more when you do it in your personal life. Because what it says is I'm going to do this also on my own time. Like, I'm going to work at this on my own time. I'm not going to just use my professional time to work on this. Because, you know, I could say it simple. It's one thing you could do something on the field, or you could do something at training. But when you leave and now it's your time, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to go stand on the corner? Are you willing to go talk to someone about this on your time? And to me, we have to use both of those aspects of our life to try to change things. It's not one or the other. It's both.
I think that's well said, Peter. And look, we would do this for hours if we could. We know you have training, but I have to get one more question in.
Yeah.
This pandemic, this economic fallout we're seeing kind of across the globe in the game, how do you think it affects the transfer market? Does it provide an opportunity or value for MLS teams? Does it mean that teams are going to shut their pocketbooks and say, boy, we got to stand pat? What do you think this is going to mean for the summer window, for the next winter window and beyond?
So I think this is what, you know, you read all the books and you read all the articles and everything. It's no different than what the savvy investor does when the stock market goes down. They take the risk. They're brave. They're courageous in those moments. They look for the opportunities. They look for the discounts. And they now, you know, I don't want to, they double down. They take a shot, right? They take a risk. And I think there's a lot of discounts, and there'll be a lot of discounts in this next window and the window after. And the question is, are you willing to you know, take advantage of that? You know, I look at it like on our side, I'm really glad that we were able to make the acquisition that we did with Pulido prior to this happening, because I don't know if we would have been willing to do it, you know, now. I'm glad we were able to do that. So that helps us. But for the team that was maybe waiting to the summer window or waiting to the winter window coming up, you know, how do they react now? And so it's going to depend on how brave, courageous, you know, each individual club is. For us, we're going to continue. We've always done this. And that is, I think we've always looked for deals, if you will, like real discounted deals. It's kind of been the makeup of our club for years, also being a small market. And we'll continue to try and do that even in this environment as well.
All right. Look forward to the summer. See what teams do, Sporting Kansas City included. Look forward to July 8th in this tournament. Our soccer is coming back. Peter, we always enjoy chatting with you. Thanks for your time, man.
Okay, thanks, appreciate Peter. It. Charlie,
yes.
If it was up to me, you're not always picking it back.
Thank you. I know.
That's what Charlie was fishing for.
All right. Take it easy, guys. Good talking to you.
You too.
All right. Big thanks to Peter for joining us. Always a joy to chat with him. Of course, I always have like 7 questions we didn't get to ask. So until next time, before we get to Sean Johnson and the Black Players Coalition and everything they are doing and will be doing in the months and years ahead, just saw on Twitter, Doyle, you dropped in the chat, the king transfer troll himself, Darren Eales, throws up on the background, just happened to perfectly fit the whiteboard in his video chat, quote-unquote, designated player topics, including Gareth Bale, Leo Messi, just, you know, some very humble, small, achievable goals for Atlanta United. Good job, Darren. Well done. You've stolen at least 25 seconds.
You're not falling for it, Weeby? You don't believe that Gareth Bale is atop the Atlanta United?
Gareth Bale, I could believe.
Because of the golf in Georgia. I mean, literally the match.
But you did as well. And come on, Mercedes-Benz just got ranked the second best stadium in the world. So come on, get Gareth, there, and we'll talk about it.
And anyone who follows world soccer to any extent knows that Messi's probably one of the biggest Ludacris fans in the world. So he's always stated that he wanted to play in Atlanta at some point, even before they had an MLS team. So it seems pretty obvious.
It's actually, I think he's more of an outcast guy. Definitely an under 3000 guy over big boy, but you know, they're both great. Love them both. Geniuses. Let's get to the greatest team of all time, which we've let just lay fallow for the better part of a month because there were more important things to talk about. What are you going to do? It was semi-contrived in the first place. But we have our semifinals here. Let's see. Let's start on this side of the bracket with the blowout, let's say, in the fan vote. 2017 Toronto FC, 70%. 2014 LA Galaxy, 30%. Who's going to the final for you guys?
So this was obvious for me until Peter Vermees came on the show 15 minutes ago and like pretty quickly said the Galaxy overall as like the winner of all.
He threw in Beckham. So, you know, he's a little off there too.
Yeah, man. That's true.
Okay.
But I was like, and then he claimed, you know, talked about Jaime Moreno for a while. I was so surprised that PV was quick. Maybe he was the only one that stuck in his head where he was like, I'll just listen to one thing Andrew says and just repeat it back.
Yeah, but he was like, hey, difference makers on like Landon, Beckham, Keane. And I was like, we're not talking about difference makers on that Toronto team? Like,
yeah,
arguably the second best player in league history in Jovinko, and then Josie and Victor Vasquez and their depth and their like best 11 talent at so many positions and their CCL run and their treble. I don't know, man. To me, this is an easy – not easy. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it should be closer.
Yes.
The percentage should be closer to
Toronto FC. To me.
It shouldn't be because LA Galaxy shouldn't even be here. It should be Seattle, but continue.
Oh, boy.
Here we go again. That's Toronto.
All right, we got 1 for Toronto, 2 for Toronto with me, 1 for LA Galaxy from the fans. Dave, who are you going with?
Wait, the Galaxy won the vote?
Oh, that's 3. Sorry, my math is off. So they've already won.
Put your finger down. Put your one finger down, Weeby. Put the three fingers up.
0.
Yeah. But Toronto's already won. David and I don't even have to vote.
Yes, you do. Come on. Make your vote.
Don't do the cop out.
Yeah, make your vote.
It's obviously Toronto FC. That Galaxy team was one of the great teams of the pre-TAM era, and what they did from the moment Landon got cut from the 2014 World Cup team up until winning MLS Cup, they were fantastic. They played some of the best, most attractive soccer in league history, but they were only a smidge better than that Seattle team, and they were frankly only a smidge better than Charlie's Revs in the final. Like, that could have gone the other way, whereas Toronto didn't really leave much doubt throughout the year in every competition. They ran away with the Supporters' Shield and they cruised to it. They had to fight in the Canadian Championship, but they were the better team and they proved it. And then that 2017 MLS Cup performance, if Stefan Fry doesn't stand on his head for the whole first hour, it's 4-0 before we even hit the final 30 minutes of that game. Like, Toronto was just dominant wire to wire that season in a way we've never seen from another team in this league. So no disrespect to that great Galaxy team of 2014. They deserved to be here. But Toronto FC won everything they competed for in 2017, and they did it in style.
And they had the sticks on a wave.
Sorry, and Peter Vermees isn't wrong in saying that the Galaxy had game changers, but I don't think that's where the difference between these teams lies, because they both have some of the best creators in league history. It's Toronto FC's depth and the fact that the Galaxy started Leonardo in MLS Cup and brought Baggio, Husidic, and Dan Gargan off the bench. And then you look at TFC with, I don't think they had a weakness in the starting lineup. And they had, you know, Panamanian international like Armando Cooper, who struggled with them, but is a great player to bring off the bench. So the level of teams, I think, from 9 through 14 is even the bigger difference than, you know, you could throw Keane and Jovinko in the same convo and Josie and Landon and whatever else.
All right. We all agree. Charlie, I guess we'll let you cop out on this one and make you start off on the next one. 98 DC United got Peter's vote. They did not get the fan vote. That's 2018 Atlanta. No surprise there. We had a lot of people on Twitter saying, why are you guys letting fans vote with Atlanta? They're just going to win it. Well, that's why it's just 1 out of 5 votes. But you got, is this going to be old school, new school in the final? Is it going to be new school, new school? Where are you going? 98 DC, that Bruce Arena team, or 2018 Atlanta?
I'm going 98 DC United.
Why?
Jaime Moreno.
Right? I could.
Echeverry, Eddie Pope. It's just a solid team with so much experience, tactically aware. When you look at quality teams, the depth buying into a system, having a players dictate tempo, they could play against any team, any style, because they had those kind of players who could grind out wins, could also beat you on the ground playing the beautiful way that they did at times. That's my team. It's DC United taking over Atlanta. Although you got Almirón, you have Joseph Martinez, still this DC United team from front to back, solid, give them the win. They're in the final.
Okay, 1-1. Fans and Charlie, we know where Doyle's going, right? I mean, you're going 98 DC. I can't imagine any other scenario here.
Yeah, I am. And this was, I've said it a million times during this this whole thought experiment. This was the most dominant team of the most dominant dynasty in league history. They and they won not just in the league, but they won international competitions and did so in style. Now, there are some caveats, and obviously they didn't win any league trophies in 1998, but this was still DC United at their apex. They had in Echeverry a Mount Rushmore MLS player. They had in Moreno an arguably Mount Rushmore MLS player. They had Ben Olsen and John Harkes and Tony Sané and Eddie Pope and Jeff Agus and Carlos Llamosa. Just keeps going on and on. They lost Raul Diaz Arce to start the season. After a month, they were able to get in Roy Lassiter, and he scored 20 goals. You know, like they just checked so many boxes in terms of how they could beat you, and they didn't just do it in the league. They did it against teams like Vasco da Gama, the Copa Libertadores winner, and you know, in the CONCACAF Champions Cup as well. So, all due respect to Atlanta, who showed some tactical flexibility in terms of, you know, they were the stylish possession attacking team throughout the season and then became sort of a sit and counter team in the postseason. And I think that showed a lot of maturity and a lot of flexibility and a lot of talent. But DC were just a little bit better.
I don't need to give anything. Doyle's was going to give him the explanation for me, and I vote DC.
Yeah, look, if it wasn't for the Red Bulls, I think Atlanta has a much better shot because they're probably Shield winners. They probably don't have any sort of like blemish as far as a challenger. It's just them against the rest. But they did have the Red Bulls, and the Red Bulls stuck them in the regular season and kept them from the double. And DC, as you said, the best team in the best dynasty of all time in this league. It's got to be old school, new school. It's got to be DC against Toronto in the final. That's what it's going to be. We'll settle it on Thursday. 2017 Toronto FC, 1998 DC United, separated by about 20 years, but they're coming together. So look out for that poll. We'll put it out on Wednesday, and we'll debate this thing to the death.
I thought you were going to overrule. I honestly thought Weeby was going to like use host privilege and just like overrule all of this to get Atlanta into the final, just to get the.
He wouldn't do that.
He wouldn't do that unless Zlatan played for Atlanta. Then he would have done it.
He's not that crazy.
I'm not lighting candles for Atlanta United, but for the Galaxy, baby, my shrine is still up and running even here in Vacaville, California. If anything, it's even stronger here because I'm closer to the source. These candles are just I'm going through candles like nobody's business. All right, let's get to Sean Johnson. You may have heard, you may have read, you may have seen the Black Players Coalition came together on Juneteenth. Sean Johnson, one of the board there with them. Let's bring him on.
Sean Johnson, welcome to Extra Time, man.
Thanks for having me, as always, man. Appreciate it.
We will talk NYCFC. We will talk MLS is back, the tournament, everything going on in your life as far as soccer. But let's talk about what really matters off the field. On Juneteenth, the Black Players Coalition announced out into the open. Your guys' goals, your group, your leadership, everything people need to know is public and on your website. And we'll share that. But I want from your point of view, Sean, how this happened, why it happened, and what it means to you personally.
Yeah, I'll just start off by just going back, you know, sharing, you know, after the George Floyd situation, you know, I think a lot of us, a lot of the Black players, you know, shared similar feelings. There's a lot of sadness, a lot of, you know, confusion, just a lot of emotions surrounding that situation. We had chats internally, and we came together, you know, Instagram group chat, and just started talking about, you know, how each other felt, kind of one being there for each other, just to hear each other, and then just deciding that, you know, enough is enough. This has been happening for way too long. You know, we have the platform to do something. Let's come together and do something bigger that's going to last a long time and affect a lot of people.
What were those conversations like when you decided to do the organization? Because I think that's like, you know, you guys have to not just talk about it, you have to take real action and band together and organize. And sometimes that can be difficult, and other times it comes together naturally.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, the difficulty of doing it, I think we're all committed to, you know, like I said, a bigger cause. So for us, the work that it took to get that organized, you know, so many guys were instrumental in making sure we spread word quickly. We got in touch with, you know, a host of Black players. We got, you know, I think eventually 70 plus Black players on a giant Zoom call, just discussing, strategizing, about what we wanted the organization to look like, what we wanted to do. Some of the things that were important to us, that we wanted to get across and make sure that we're, you know, addressed. So, that process was, probably, I would say within a week, you know, from the time that we started talking about the idea. Everybody did their part to reach out, brought guys in. We made sure everybody was heard, got on the same page, got organized, strategized, and here we are.
We saw the list of the names, you know, that are going to be the leaders of this organization. Is the idea that you all speak and that's how you have a voice as a group, or does everyone get involved? Is it be, you know, broken out by team? How do you expect it to work?
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, we're moving, you know, quickly, but smartly as well. You know, we wanted to make sure that we got our organization, you know, organized. We developed things that we wanted to get together before announcing ourselves. Now I think it's imperative that we continue to build out strategies to make sure that we're getting to every single Black player. We're getting to, bring in everybody. And I think, you know, just to touch on, you know, there's such a far reach. And when we talk about how we were able to build out, get 70 plus players on a Zoom call within 1 week. I think everybody was enthusiastic and looking forward to you know, being a part of this coalition. So we have guys, you know, guys on the board, obviously that represent, you know, a lot of different teams within the league. But again, we have, you know, we have weekly calls where we're bringing everybody in. We're making sure that, you know, if there is somebody that wants to be involved that hasn't, you know, necessarily heard about it, hasn't necessarily been you know, integral in what we've been doing. We want to make sure that everybody's got that opportunity. And I think we've done a good job of making sure that we have, you know, a far reach to make sure that everybody isn't left out.
Behind the scenes, you guys will do your work. And I think, you know, on our part, we'll react and support and help in any way we can, but I'm really curious about some of the particulars as it pertains to change within our league, within our sport, within our lives. Like, what are the things that you guys want to accomplish? If I was talking to you, Sean, 5 years from now, what do you hope you're sort of laying out and saying, we got this done, this done, this done? This is like the legacy that we have and are continuing to build.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that we want to focus on is, you know, sustainable change, right? And that's going to be long after, you know, we as players are out of this league, you know, for future generations, but not only for future generations as well. We're talking about post-career, what that means. And so just touching on some of the things that we have discussed, you know, through strategic partnering with Major League Soccer and the MLSPA, we also want to work on ways to make sure that we address, you know, the racial inequity within the league, within all levels of the league, you know, not just, you know, players coming into the league, what opportunity means for players coming into the league, but in the league, how black players are treated, making sure that, you know, the opportunity, within clubs, making sure that there's situations where now we have, you know, clubs have a better understanding, front offices have a better understanding, teammates have a better understanding as what we go through as black players within this league. And then, you know, reaching past that is post-career. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not enough representation, you know, in the executive office within the league in terms of coaches within the league, coaching opportunities. You know, so starting from the bottom up or the top down, whatever you want to call it, making sure we address every single level as it pertains to racial equity within this league and making sure that opportunity isn't something that's hindered by the racial biases that are ever so present in society and in the league as well.
So can current and former players join this, or is it only for current players? You know, like a guy
Charlie's
like
trying to get in, Sean.
A guy like Kobe Jones, for instance, you know, who's one of the pioneers for black players in this country, Ernie Stewart, Ali Curtis, some of these guys that have big positions, could they be able to join this group, or is it currently just for players who are presently playing?
Yeah, so currently we came together as players who are playing, you know, not excluding free agents as well. I think it was important for us to also to have, you know, black players that have been in positions, you know, that also have that experience of what they've gone through, that may not necessarily be playing anymore. I think it's important to bring in that type of experience, to bring in those stories, bring in those experiences, you know, that can help us, you know, when we're trying to address, you know, change at the level beyond which, you know, is being a player within this league. So yeah, that's important to us. And as we continue to build, we'll continue to discuss strategies to bring in, I think, veteran players you know, veteran resources to make sure that we are, you know, as far-reaching as possible, and that we have the ability to address every single issue in its entirety.
From what you've seen, seen in your time in this league, because you've been in for a while, you mentioned, you know, not just playing opportunities, but those coaching opportunities, those front office opportunities. Where is the disconnect? Because there is an opportunity for black players in this league, but then there's something that happens in the opportunities to push forward as you are focused on. Where do you see the disconnects that you think you can create change and change minds or give opportunities?
Yeah, no, I think it's something that when you're addressing an issue like that, you want to, you know, look at it from a standpoint of, you know, where do the issues lie? Where do things start to get disconnected, as you said? And when you talk about you know, being done with your career, you know, it's a lot easier for some players to transition directly into a coaching job, you know, in terms of what the image looks like to an organization or a club of having, you know, a black player within a certain position. There's certain biases that you know, some clubs don't even realize that they have, that the league doesn't even realize that it has when including people in the discussion for jobs, for job opportunity, when it comes to interviewing, when it comes to, you know, a job application, maybe overlooking certain players and what that may mean for the organization. What type of image from the outside looking in is that, you know, perception is a big part of, you know, the workplace, you know, and we want to get away from, from that being something that's driven or being a driving factor in terms of how somebody is hired. You know, we want the equal opportunity. If you are a candidate, you have the experience, you are qualified or overqualified for a position. We should get away from the biases that are, making clubs MLS in itself look away from bringing those players in. And I think addressing those issues is a part of the education to talk about, how those are deeply rooted systemic issues that go far beyond the workplace. That's where we also transition into the community. How can we maybe, an idea is potentially having some type of education and training set up in communities to help give that experience for certain positions, not just talking about coaching in particular, but start to get into Black communities, give that experience so that there's more opportunity to come up and directly transition into these jobs. I think it's important that we don't just address it at the top, but we also go beyond that and address it in the community as well. I think that's a big part of change and sustainable change.
We look forward to seeing what you guys do and the legacy that you leave and are already leaving, Sean. And just proud to see you guys organize and do this in a way that that shows that unity and also the desire for change. Last one on this, and we'll get to New York City because there is soccer coming. But you got 75,000 from the Players Union. You're going to keep pushing forward. I wonder what you're going to do with that money and what are some of the things that we can look for maybe in the next couple months or in the next year that are really important that you want to hit the ground running with.
Yeah, no, I think, we talk about, contributing and making sure that, we fund initiatives that help with this type of training that's necessary. We also want to make sure that these are being addressed, like I said, outside of the league, which in turn, addresses the systemic problem in society. That's a really important thing for us. $75,000, we have, a specific plan that we're building out. But just off the top, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the Equal Justice Initiatives, Fair Fight, 100 Black Women, 100 Black Men. There's just some organizations that we have planned to make donations to. And, I think when we talk about change, it's really important for these organizations to, that we believe in, that we vet out, that we have, that have our full backing to make sure that they have the resources needed to also move forward with the work they're doing. So that's just a snapshot.
Yeah, the conversation doesn't end.
Weaves, before we move on, for our fans out there, is there anything they can do to help out or get involved or just be kept aware?
Yeah, we're going to do our best job, obviously, to keep fans involved. I think it's important. We're not excluding anybody. We want all the help we can. To make sure that support is going to the right place. And so as we continue to build, we'll continue to make fans and other people alike aware of ways that they can contribute and also help moving forward to the things that we're trying to accomplish.
Easiest way, I think, right now probably is your Twitter account, right? At BPCMLS?
Correct.
Yep. Correct. So go follow that, folks. Take time, hit pause, go do that right now. Let's talk soccer before we let you go here, Sean. Six teams in Group A, and I said from the jump, that's not where I would want to be because of the math. How do you feel about that wild Group A?
Yeah, it's wild, but, it is what it is, right? And, for me, as a professional athlete, as a competitor, getting put into a situation, you can look at it as unfavorable, or you can look at it as just another situation that you have to overcome to becoming a champion or the best of the best. So, no matter what opponent we step on the field against, we want to win and we want to be dominant doing so. And I echo that. We're a club that has really high standards, and looking for excuses off the bat, I don't think is something that we stand for by any means.
Well, the biggest story for NYCFC coming into the season and still maintains is Domi Torrent leaving and getting a new coach. And last time this happened, you went from the darling of MLS, Patrick Vieira, to a rocky road to build back up. Is there anything you feel like you saw or learned in that experience that has been different this time, or that seems like the club as a whole understands how to do this process differently?
Yeah, you know, I think when we talk about transition, you know, we're a club that has had, you know, a lot of that within the past, you know, I would say 5 years, 6 years since the inception. But one thing that's always been maintained is the results and success within the team. So for me, you know, change is natural within a locker room. You know, you look at, you know, coaching staff and the continuity of a coaching staff. But one thing that's been great with our team, that's a unique situation, is that our locker room is pretty much stayed the same, with the additions of one or two since the end of Patrick's era when Domi first came in. So it's a lot easier for a coach to transition in, understanding the personnel, understanding what type of system you're walking into, and then being able to add to that.
Is there any young academy product that we should be aware of that you've seen in training and like, not many people know who he is, but they will. Is there somebody we should be aware of?
Like a guy named Gio Reyna, someone like that.
Hey, Gio. Gio's doing his thing, man. Big ups to Gio. He's doing well. now we've got a couple bright young players, man. I think, you know, just off the top of my head, Justin Hack, a really good player. He made, you know, he could play six, he could play eight. Really, really comfortable on the ball, really good technique. Tavon Gray's, you know, tremendous talent. Looking forward to how he grows. Obviously, we have a lot of good young talent, you know, not just you know, people have come up through the academy, but you got looking at James Sands, JP Torres, like all young players are motivated, driven. And I think that's really all you can ask for. But yeah, when you look at products of the academy, I think Tavon and Justin are two ones to look out for sure.
All right, give us the Gio Reyna in training stuff. I mean, he was with the first team some, right? I mean, what did you see? Are you surprised what he's doing in Dortmund?
You teach everything?
Not at all. You know, I'm not gonna take any credit for Gio's performances. I'm not gonna be that guy. he's really good, man. He honestly was a cut above the rest in terms of just his ability. He'd come into training and you would think that he was a 9 or 10 that was seasoned for years. And I say that, I've been saying that for a very long time, since Gio, I first started, you know, training with Gio, since Gio first came around the locker room. He's a great kid as well, you know? So I'm happy for him and his progress and what he's doing over there. He's quickly rising to become the talent that everybody has seen here, in New York. But, I mean, the amount of potential the kid has and just now starting out, can't help but think he's on pace to be the next best thing, if you will, or the
American next, dream.
The American dream, as Zagalin called it. So.
Although linking up with Red Bull guys overseas, so he's got to watch out with that.
Yeah. You got to be careful with the Red Bull guys, either way.
Sean, for you, first place in the Eastern Conference last year, and as you said, so much stability in this roster, which a lot of people argue is the deepest in the league. Are you guys the best team in MLS? And if not, what is it that is keeping you from that top?
Yeah, you know, I think to be the best, you've got to be crowned champion, right? And we have to earn that right. And we fully believe in our abilities. I think we've always gotten to that place within the playoffs. Everybody talks about, you know, the first round of the Eastern Conference semis, and I think it's just really just manning up and realizing what's necessary to get past that point. And if it's a mentality, it's obviously not our ability. You know, we placed first in the East and put ourselves in prime position. But, you know, when push comes to shove, we have to make sure that we are warriors, you know, and going into games and making sure that not only are we superior, you know, from a soccer standpoint, but from a mentality standpoint as well. And forgetting and learning from last year, but putting that behind us and realizing this is a new year, new opportunity. And I think we have the guys that are, you know, that will put us in a great position to do what we want to do. And we got to put up a championship sooner than later.
So, I know you're going to get sooner. I know you're going to get humble with me on this, but come on, man, you got robbed for goalkeeper of the year last year. You got robbed.
You got robbed,
I mean, right? Am I wrong?
Listen. I, you know, accolades to me, you know, I'm all about, I'd rather lift a championship, to be fair, but Bay, you know, I feel like I had a good case for being the goalkeeper of the year, but you know, it's not up to me to decide. So that's I think it was a good season though. I felt good with the season I had. That's really all you can do.
Before we let you go, who's the one guy that we don't think about NYCFC that you're sitting back in goal or you're in small sided or you're in 11v11 in training, and you're just like, whoo, this guy is something else. He's nice.
Oof. We got a lot of quality, man. Ishmael Durishradi. He is.
I knew it.
He is raw, my guy. Like he's nice. Like he's the one player for me. I've said it. I had conversations he's come in, but he's unbelievable talent. Just his ability, his left foot up there with the best in the league. I think, you know, he's one season away, like a stretch of games away from getting that notoriety as being in that discussion of top players. He's a special talent.
How are you going to feel when you hit the field finally after all these months? What's it going to be like? What's going through your mind in that moment?
Man, I'm getting right back into the place where I know best, you know. For me, it's a place where, you know, it's been way too long. But you know, I think, you know, your mentality, my mentality never changes in terms of whenever I step on the field. My mentality is always going to be the same. We want to win. We want to be dominant doing so. Everybody's got to be on the same page, and it's time to go once you cross that line.
Are you worried at all about the humidity, the heat, with your current squad, or do you think you have enough depth and you'll be able to figure it out?
Sean's not running.
Yeah, I'm not.
He's got the water bottle. No, the water bottle's in the goal.
You gotta stand there with all that black, the jersey on, all the heat coming right to you.
That's true. Everybody thinks it's easy to stand back as a goalkeeper, but I tell you what, my teammates would probably kill me if they heard that. they've been running. I don't think the heat's definitely not one of our worries. I don't think the humidity is either going to be a concern as well. I mean, we've got there's heat and humidity here. We've been training. We'll be training in the middle of the day in a couple of days here to get used to that type of heat. But no, that's not a problem. I don't think we've experienced the summers in this league. We've experienced, you know, what it means to play in, you know, the Houston's in the middle of the summer, the Dallas in the middle of the summer. Oof. something different. Yeah. But that's not one of the worries for sure.
Whether it's you guys or someone else, what wins this thing?
It's tough to tell, man. It's a different format, obviously, than anybody's seen. I mean, it's important not losing sight of the first three games counting towards the league standings, and then, you know, also in that process, you're also thinking about a tournament as well. So it's like, all right, well, if we need a point to advance, but you also want to make sure that you're giving yourself the best ability to put yourself in a position within the league. So we'll address that when it comes. But I think when you get down to those knockout stages, I think then you'll start to see the tournament type mentality come through. But you know, I think you have, in my opinion, you have to approach the first three games or the first two games at least going in, you know, to win. There's no type of results being managed, anything like that, as you would in a tournament, you know, in certain scenarios. Every time you step on the field, you got to just try to win. And you win, what, six games, you're champion. So
there you go. 1.1 mil, little CCL spot. Not bad. Thank you, Sean, for joining us, man. Thanks for the work that you're doing off the field as well at BPCMLS, Black Players Coalition. If you want to search that out, definitely do so. Go read about the mission and pay attention to what these guys are doing. Sean, thank you so much for your time, man. Good luck.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks for having me, as always.
The best baritone in the game, Sean Johnston. Doing great work. Black Players Coalition, go follow them on Twitter. Go see what they're doing. Support them if you can. Before we get out of here, we don't have time for the mailbag. That's what the producers tell me. You know, I'd go 2 hours if I could. But on Thursday, we'll do some guarantees for the MLS Is Back tournament. Just 16 days, folks, as of June 22nd, this Monday. So stay tuned. We'll keep breaking it down. We'll preview the whole thing, have more interviews. We'll have a special previewing the entire tournament on Continental Channels. Look out for that as well. We're getting out of here. We'll see you on Thursday. Thanks for listening.